Last time we were in the middle of doing a calculation, I realized one thing that I forgot to say is that what's probably clear from context is that so far I've been neglecting the expansion of the universe. In other words, everything so far is far out of my consciousness. I'll put in the today I'll work out what happens if you put a thermal plasma in the expanding universe. And we were in the middle of the calculation and we derived this result that for a general thermal plasma consisting of many species, the energy density was given by this expression. Is the mean occupation number of a mode with wave number Q. Where in this expression and elsewhere, I'm using a notation where the upper sign applies for a boson and then the lower sign applies for a fermion. And EQ is defined to be the energy of the particle at momentum Q. And so you might, just as a concrete example, imagine a thermal plasma consisting of three species, E plus E minus and photons. This would be a good description of the universe at temperatures above 0.5 MeV, where the electrons annihilate, and below 100 MeV, where the ions and muons annihilate. So, these would be species with G equals 2 and rest mass 0.5 MeV. And the photon has G equals 2 and the electrons and positrons are perfect. And the photon has G equals 2 mass 0, that is a boson. So I'm going to pick up the calculation for. From here, but first this might be a good time to pause and ask if there are any questions. But this is more or less just summing over all modes in the volume, where the contribution of each mode to the energy density is its occupation number or mean number of particles multiplied by EQ or the energy per particle. Yes?
I was just about the So why does the photon have Z equals 2 as well? Shouldn't it have
the photon has 2 degrees of freedom. Like physically.
Physical degrees. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Physically there are two polarizations for light.
Okay.
But the counting of degrees of freedom is a little non-trivial in gauge theory. The object A mu has 4 components, so the number of physical. I suppose I should put the mic on. Well, I don't know if it's if it'll get recorded today.
Okay. The so in particular, this expression for the energy density is a function of the mass of each particle and its temperature. For general values of m and t, this integral can't be done analytically. But it does simplify in the relativistic or non-relativistic limits, where the mass of the particle is much less than the temperature or much greater than the temperature, respectively. And so that's the next thing that I want to work out. So if I take the first the relativistic limit, where the mass is much less than the temperature, then I can make the approximation. That means that all momenta with non-negligible probability are much less than the rest mass. So I can just make the approximation that the energy is equal to the momentum, as it would be for a massless particle. And then the integral can be done analytically. So just omitting the sum over species, the integral looks like this. Q squared times Q cubed. And from here, so this integral is of the so-called thermal type. That's just my terminology that I talked about last time. If the particle is a boson, if the sign here is minus, then you get pi squared times gamma of 4 times zeta of 4. That was the general way that I wrote this integral last time. And then if the particle is a fermion, then you get, if I have the plus sign here, then I showed last time that you get the same thing with a little prefactor. So then plugging in gamma 4 is 3 factorial or 6, and zeta 4 is this magic constant of pi to the 4th over 90. Then I get g times pi squared over 30. Sorry, I forgot a factor of t to the 4th here. Times t to the 4th for the boson. You'll recall, now we can just check that our result is consistent with the classical blackbody formula. For a photon gas, the result is pi squared over 15 times t to the 4th, because the photon has g equals 2 and is always relativistic. And then for the fermion, I'm just going to write the result with a 7/8 put in. Write the same thing with the 7/8 to the 4th for a fermion. If you want to be a little bit more rigorous about the approximation that was being made here, you can calculate subleading terms and show that they lead to corrections of fractional size m squared over t squared. I thought about making that a homework problem or a tutorial, but I decided not to. In the non-relativistic limit, it's harder to see what to do. Let me start. In the first few lines, I'm not going to make any approximations. I'll just make some changes of variable. I've chosen to write the occupation number fq this way with e to the minus eq over t over 1 minus e to the minus eq over t. So where EQ is the square root of M squared plus Q. So one thing that you can see from this expression is that rho is going to be very exponentially suppressed. If the temperatures or the typical Qs are much lower than the rest mass, then there'll be this big factor of e to the minus m over t, this exponential suppression sitting in front here. So the integral is sort of dominated by that that exponential fall off. So that combination of words is intended to motivate the change of variables from q to e. I think that's the best way to see how to take the non-relativistic limit. So I'll define e to be the q to be squared minus e squared to e q to q. So if I make that, I'm just changing variables to variables where it's easier to see how the non-relativistic limit works. So then I get a factor of so the q dq became e de, and then I have another q, which is this, and then I have another e, which went into the e squared. The next thing I'm going to do is just change to some dimensionless variables. Here the integral goes from, in the first line, the integral went from q equals 0 to q equals infinity. But in the second line, the integral goes from e equals m to e equals infinity. So just to make it look a little cleaner, I'll make this change of variable, which both starts the integral at 0 and also switches to a dimensionless variable x. And then I'll define lambda to be the dimensionless quantity m over t, which by assumption is much larger than 1. And then making this change of variable, get this. So far, I haven't made any approximations. Like this, it's just variable changes. So this expression is also valid in the relativistic limit. I also slightly screwed up by choosing the minus sign when I wanted to put minus plus everywhere. I'd like this calculation to apply for both bosons and fermions. Okay. And then in this step, I'll take the relativistic limit. Sorry, the non-relativistic limit. Since lambda is large compared to x, I can, in this step, I'm going to I'm replacing each term by its leading behavior in the limit where lambda is large. I'll write this as and then I'll approximate this last factor as e to the minus x minus lambda, because if lambda is large and x is greater than or equal to 0, then this exponential in the denominator is always small compared to the 1. You'll notice that at this point in the calculation, the dependence has dropped out on whether the particle is a boson or a fermion. And then this is the only step where I'm making an approximation which is valid for lambda much greater than 1. And then this is an integral that I can do exactly. If I pull out the pull out some factors, minus lambda, then I'm left with this integral, dx. Forgot the dx in this one. And you'll recognize this as the gamma function evaluated at 3/2. Which we showed how to compute last time. We used the recursion related relation for the gamma function to write it in terms of gamma of 1/2. And that turns out to have this magic value of root pi. So now the mechanical boards are a little more fun, I have to say. Less predictable. And so then converting back to the original variables, the result can be written this way. So as expected, in the non-relativistic limit, the abundance of a thermal particle is exponentially suppressed to z to the minus m over t. When the temperature falls below the rest mass, you start to get this exponential suppression, or sometimes the term Boltzmann suppression is used. So, this is physically intuitive. Like, if I have a bunch of positrons and electrons around in a cold universe, then when they find each other, they'll annihilate. But a process where two photons find each other with enough energy to combine, to pair produce a positron and electron is exponentially unlikely if the temperature is much lower than the rest mass. Conversely, if the temperature is much higher than the mass of the particle, then the particle is effectively massless compared to the thermal energy scale, and so it's there in abundance the same way that any thermal particle would be.
Can I ask something before we continue?
Yes.
So it's about the approximation. So in the integral, you're integrating from 0 to infinity, and you have dropped terms, for example, as x plus lambda. But I mean, since it's being integrated over, at some point x is going to be very, very big. So why can we drop x?
Yeah. I find this non-relativistic limit like rather non-trivial. So I wanted to do it in a way. One thing that I often do if I'm uncertain if I'm making an accurate approximation is to think about the size of the subleading terms. So if you kept a term in this expression. So that's kind of a formal way that you can check. If I kept a term in this integral of fractional size lambda over x, then you can see that it corrects the final expression. Sorry, of size x over lambda. Then you can see that the final result will get a fractional correction of order 1 over lambda. That's one way of seeing it. Another, maybe more intuitive way is seeing that because you are multiplying by that exponential, by that e to the minus x, that for x much larger than 1, the integrand is being exponentially suppressed. And so when staring at expressions like x plus 2 lambda to the 1/2, it's sort of OK to pretend that x is always of order 1 or smaller, because those are the values of x that dominate the integral that aren't cut off by the exponential.
OK.
Um, Yeah, that was a really good question. Like, I kind of had to, I think the first time I saw this, I really had to stare at it to really convince myself. Okay, and so summarizing the different cases that we worked out, the energy density of a thermal species is always given by this exact expression. Let's write it as g over 2 pi squared. It's the integral of dq q squared. That integral doesn't have a nice analytic form, but it can be written as this way for a relativistic boson. This way for a relativistic fermion. And for a non-relativistic particle, it has the same Boltzmann suppressed limit for a boson or a fermion. So now you can see qualitatively that as an expanding universe cools, the thermal state will be a plasma of positrons, electrons, and photons above the rest mass of the electron. And then the electrons and positrons will exponentially annihilate when the temperature gets colder. Now, we'll sometimes need expressions for some related quantities. For example, the number density. So rho is the energy density. And the number density, for example, is similar. It's just the same integral, but with without the factor of eq. Just for reference, I'll go ahead and write down the results. So here's where you get, for example, a relativistic boson. I signed this as a problem in tutorial 3. And, it works similarly. The overall scaling is t cubed, and now with the without the factor of eq, you end up getting zeta 3 instead of zeta 4. So the answer can't be written as nicely. You have this factor of zeta 3 floating around. Finally, there's the pressure. This form. I think this factor of q squared over eq is like really non-trivial to derive. For the number density, I just have fq since I'm counting particles. And for the energy density, I have fqeq since I'm summing the energy of particles. The statement that a particle of momentum q contributes q squared over eq, 3eq. Um, That I think is really not obvious. And this applies in like a general special relativity situation where the particle can be either non-relativistic or relativistic. Since we won't use this expression for the pressure very much, I decided to skip the derivation in the lecture just for reasons of time. But you can find the derivation in the Bellman notes. I just wanted to, I thought it was useful to mention that this is non-trivial, though. This is not something that you're supposed to stare at and think is self-evident. Anyway, let me write down the... limits here. One little thing that you might notice here is that if you, it's kind of a nice consistency check on some, between these calculations and some things that we did before, is that if you work out the equation of state P over rho, the equation of state W, for a thermal species, then you get 1/3 in the relativistic case. And something which approaches zero in the non-relativistic case. I guess you get exactly, you get T over M, which goes to zero. That's consistent with our earlier statements that radiation or any ensemble of relativistic particles has an equation of state 1/3. And matter or any ensemble of non-relativistic particles has equation of state zero. Okay. Since I'm not going to derive this magic factor of q squared over 3eq, then that's it for a. A non-expanding universe in thermal equilibrium. Next, I'm going to move on to expanding universe in thermal equilibrium. Maybe this is a good time to pause and ask if there are any questions. Yes.
In the number density, the non-relativistic particles, did we miss this factor of mass, or is it the same as energy density?
Yeah, I just had that wrong in my notes, huh? Yeah, that was a really good catch. It's definitely wrong on the blackboard. Let's see if it's wrong in my notes. Oh, yeah, okay. It's correct in my notes. I just wrote it down wrong. That was very astute, because in the non-relativistic limit where particles get energy from their rest mass, then it must be the case that the energy density is a factor of m times the number density. Okay. Thanks. Any more questions, or more like a correction than a question? Okay, so now I want to talk about an expanding universe that contains a thermal plasma. I have one word to add here, which is an adiabatically expanding universe. I'm going to assume for now that the expansion is adiabatic, which means that as the universe expands, the plasma remains in thermal equilibrium. And the only thing that changes with the expansion is that the temperature evolves. Intuitively, it's expected that the plasma would cool because of the redshifting effect. Generally speaking, if I have some particles and they have some thermal motion, if I expand the universe a little bit, then the velocities redshift and the plasma loses a little bit of energy. And then what I'm assuming is that as that happens, the interactions that restore thermal equilibrium are rapid enough that the plasma reaches thermal equilibrium at some slightly lower temperature. And so at every instantaneous time, or value of A, the universe is in thermal equilibrium at some value of T. And so the only thing that there really is to compute is this function, how T depends on the scale factor A. So I'm going to explain how that's computed. So I think it's useful first just to point out that conceptually, all the equations that we would need to compute T as a function of A have been written down. We have explicit expressions for rho as a function of, for rho and p as functions of t. I'll describe how you could numerically compute this on the computer. So imagine coding up these functions. We wrote them down as integrals for the energy density and the pressure as a function of t. And then the only equation that you need to know to get the evolution is the continuity equation. Let me write that as d rho d log A. It's minus 3 times rho plus p. The best way of doing this on the computer would be to write this slightly different differential equation. Integrating this on the computer would be a bit awkward, since at every time step you have to do an integral to get the right-hand side that tells you how the temperature evolves with log A. But conceptually, there's no problem. We have enough equations to determine T of A. If you were to do this for the E plus E minus photon plasma, then you would find a really simple result. Let me plot the result of this numerical experiment. And you should pretend that this is a log-log plot. The axes are log A and log T. What you would find is that it goes as 1 over A. The temperature falls off as 1 over A. Until you reach a scale factor where the temperature is the electron mass, 0.5 MeV. And then the curve would get this little bump. And then it would continue to evolve as 1 over A. So I'm going to do a better job of drawing this so that these lines have the same slope. So relative to a case where the temperature went as 1 over A everywhere, you gain a little bit of the temperature or energy when the electrons and positrons annihilate. The amount that you gain turns out to be 11/4 to the 1/3. And physically, the reason this happens is that, I haven't really explained the 1 over A behavior, but if I take that for granted, then the reason why that little bump occurs is that when the electrons and positrons annihilate, the energy that's in their rest masses has to go somewhere. And the only place that it can go is into heating the plasma. So you get a little bit of heating here relative to what you would get if you just had the photons and no electrons and positrons present. So this really simple behavior and the appearance of a nice constant suggests a simpler picture. There is a... nice way to explain this, which is with as a conservation law. Oh, I sounded the eraser here. So in an adiabatic expanding universe, T of A is simply determined by this conservation law. Times A cubed equals constant. Where the function S of T is energy density plus pressure over T. S of T can be interpreted as entropy density or entropy per unit volume. The reason for the A cubed here is that this is entropy density per physical volume. And the conservation law says that entropy per co-moving volume is what's constant. So one way of proving this, so if you know this conservation law, then you don't need to solve any differential equations to determine T as a function of A. You just plug into the conservation law. So I want to derive this first. So one way, there's more than one argument to prove this, and I think it's useful to explain how a few different arguments work. One argument is a brute force algebra argument, which has the advantage of like zero hand waving and being totally rigorous. It just will just show that the derivative of S times A cubed is constant using the equations that we wrote down before. It kind of looks like an algebraic accident. So let me just explain how this works. So first you'll prove this key lemma. So if you take the integral representations of rho and p, take the partial derivative of p with respect to temperature, then the result can be arranged as rho plus p over t. This is going to be I'll ask you to show this in one of the tutorials. It's also left as an exercise in the Bowman notes. And then to prove the conservation law, I'll compute the derivative of my notes. I chose to make it a time derivative. I guess you could. Rather than as like a scale factor derivative. If I compute this time derivative, I'll get 4 terms by differentiating A, rho, P, and T. Let me write this as 3a squared a dot. And then work on each of these terms separately. The term involving a dot, I'll just rewrite in terms of h. The term involving rho dot, I guess that would be a little clearer if I made those two terms on the first line. For the term involving rho dot, I'll use the continuity equation in the form rho dot equals minus 3h times 1 plus rho plus b. And then for the term involving p dot, I'll write that as a here's where I want to use the lemma. So I'll write p dot as the derivative of p with respect to temperature times t dot. And I'll leave the last term. Now you can see that everything cancels. This term cancels this term. And this term cancels this term. So that's a really nice proof, but it kind of looks like an algebraic miracle. The second argument is a thermodynamic one. According to the first law of thermodynamics, there should exist some entropy function S, a function of temperature and scale factor, that satisfies the first law. Or equivalently, ds equals 1 over t. To figure out what S is, what function of T and A, we can manipulate the right-hand side so that it looks like a total derivative. It looks like D of something. It's kind of a strange argument. So I'll write U as D of rho V. Okay. In my notes, I did this. I feel like there's probably a simpler path through the algebra, but in my notes, I decided to do this. The derivative of p times v gives this p dv term plus a v dp term that I subtracted off. And then the reason for doing that to write this in terms of dp was to use what I was calling the key lemma. By the key lemma. And then you can see that you can collect terms to write this as the derivative of rho plus v, p times v over t. This is the total entropy and volume v. So if I divide by v to get the entropy density, then I get the quantity rho plus p over t that I wrote down before. Then finally, there's a third argument. Which is a homework problem. Which is based on computing the entropy microphysically. So another way of computing the entropy, besides sort of the indirectly deducing what it has to be to satisfy the first law of thermodynamics, is to count states to write the entropy as minus sum of p log p. Where the sum runs over all states x. Since we have a complete description of the thermal plasma, you know, including the probability of the general n particle state, then we can do this sum and end up getting the same result that we got over here. After a lot of calculation, you'll get rho plus p times v over t. And that's one of the problems in the homework set. Okay. So using this conservation law, we have a really easy way to a really convenient way to read off how the temperature of the universe evolves as a function of time. So next time I'll explain how this curve relates to the cosmic neutrino background and how this heating factor ends up going in, or rather it's reciprocal, ends up going into the temperature of the cosmic neutrino background. So this is a natural place to stop, so I'll stop a few minutes early. Would anyone like to ask a question on any of the calculations that we did today? Okay, great. In that case, I'll see everyone tomorrow for the 9 a.m. edition.